Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Social Print Studio, who has tons of easy and affordable photo gifts that you can order right through their Print Studio app on your phone. From ornaments and magnets to stickers and these cute teeny tiny photo books. Plus, you can take 15% off any order with the code YHL15 now through December 9th. Just go to socialprintstudio.com/YHL to get started.
I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're talking to a money expert about how achieving your biggest financial goals might be easier than you think. Plus, how a bunch of skeletons led me to a holiday decorating realization and the painting tool you're probably overlooking. So I had a holiday decorating...
Are you going to say epiphany?
Yes! It sounds very Christmassy, doesn't it? A Christmas epiphany. But it's actually a Halloween epiphany.
It's an unconventional epiphany.
It happened months ago, and I've been mulling it over. And now that Christmas decorating is upon us, right? We're about to like take out our trees or our candles or however we decorate our homes.
Yes, we should point out that we are recording this before Thanksgiving, and we have held off on actually decorating until after Thanksgiving. So as of this recording, we don't have our holiday decor up yet. I know that's like late by blogger standards.
Right. The bloggers start, I think, in August now. It's getting earlier every year. And I'm a dissenter. I like to wait until after Thanksgiving. We've all talked about how John's birthday is in November. He's very November-centric.
I'm very defensive of Thanksgiving having its due time.
Right. He's like, we're not ready for Christmas yet. It is only November.
I am permitting this discussion of the holidays, though.
Right. Well, you know, Thanksgiving's over, so it's all fair game now. But reflecting back to my Halloween epiphany, basically, I take out the same dumb decor. It couldn't even be called decor. Decor is like a generous term for this.
The tchotchkes for Halloween take out.
Yes, it's like a Halloween crow that's missing some feathers. He's like the saddest Halloween crow. He's haunted, as you would say. Or he's haunting to look at.
Yes.
I have a little owl, same thing. His little leg is bent, so he falls forward all the time. He looks dead on the porch instead of standing up and looking like decoration. So every year I take out a few fake pumpkins. We get a few real pumpkins with the kids at a pumpkin patch. I'm not a total Scrooge about pumpkins. I just don't love them.
Man, the mixing of Halloween and Christmas metaphors this episode so far.
I'm more of a Halloween and fall Scrooge than I am a Christmas Scrooge. By far, I love Christmas. I have multiple trees going on. And I love summer, but I don't necessarily love the bridge between those two things, which is fall. So I was thinking maybe I take it out on Halloween decor. Maybe I'm directing my anger against fall, the season, at Halloween decor. And then I was struck by seeing this thing on Instagram of all places. And it was a gorgeous white brick brownstone. I think it was in Manhattan. And they featured it because this woman had these amazing human-sized gold skeletons all over the facade of the building. They were holding on a rope and hanging down, hanging off a windowsill, just general hijinks these giant gold skeletons were getting into. And it stole my freaking heart. And the funny thing is, I didn't feel I should go all out this much. She was super extra and was owning her extraness. I think even in the caption, it said every year she does a different design and works with a designer to bring her vision to life. Something like that. So I was okay, she's 100 notches above me. But I did start to think I could maybe just buy 3 skeletons. And I even went as far as to look for them on Joanne Fabrics online. I was looking for big skeletons to see maybe I could get a deal.
Right, but I think what came out of the discussion of this and the contrast between what she had done and what we had done is you realize we had all these little small things that made no visual impact. You could barely see them from the street.
Right. You literally couldn't. You had to come up to our porch to be taking candy when you suddenly noticed, there's an owl face down. Oh, and that crow is so weird. It has some bald spots because the feathers are missing. These are actual garbage. I couldn't even donate these things. And I bring them out every year and they give me no joy. They hardly even give the kids joy. There is this one little skeleton burger that I will always keep. It's a chihuahua skeleton that looks just like our dog if you took his skin off. Not that I would know.
Gross.
It's very creepy, but the kids love it. We all think it's funny, and we move him around everywhere. And he's actually a bigger scale. The general point I'm trying to get to, and I know it seems kind of abstract here, is that I realized I could probably buy 3 big skeletons. spray paint them a color or leave them, and put them on the facade, and they'd be visible from the street, super fun for our kids, super fun for other kids who go trick-or-treating, and bring me a lot more excitement for this holiday than bringing out these bedraggled tchotchkes. Like, it's almost like I'm giving that holiday the short end of the stick. And in seeing those skeletons, I was like, wait a minute, I don't hate Halloween decorating. I actually think I could love it.
Right, and I think the reason why it's a helpful realization to have now at Christmas time, is because we don't have this problem with our Christmas decorations. Like, we are very happy with the impact of our Christmas decorations, and we don't really need to add to them this season at all.
Right. Like, I'm not looking for anything. I do get a fresh, like, garland around the door from Trader Joe's, super affordable, and I make a wreath with my girlfriends that's much more about the experience and, like, the fun we all have together. And I think saying that out loud, that we don't need more stuff for Christmas, is also exciting, because when Halloween rolls around and I want to spend $150 on skeletons...
I'm still coming around to this idea, guys.
Yeah, I'll put the picture in the show notes. You'll all be so charmed. But if and when that happens, I will also get to pat myself on the back for going through Christmas and just using exactly what I have, other than making that fresh wreath and getting the fresh garland. I'm not bringing anything new in. And I thought it might be interesting for you guys to hear my new sort of credo, which is like, decide what you want to make a big impact on. Aim towards that. Stop with all the little things that get in your way. And it means you might not see a bunch of new decorating ideas for Christmas, but I love the way that we decorate already. So I'm not trying to like reinvent the wheel every year anyway.
Well, and actually all this discussion about money is a good transition into our conversation today.
Yes, because so many of you have been saying, hey, John's been digging all these books. Where are your books? You left off at like sexy fairy books. What are you reading since then?
Sherry made a hard right turn from sexy fairy books to personal finance books.
Right.
As one does.
It's a normal thing to do. I felt like I was really short on knowledge about a lot of money stuff, just like retirement and insurance and investing. It's complicated because John and I work for ourselves, so we don't have like a company that matches a 401k. We don't have certain retirement benefits that you get through a job. We don't have insurance like you get through a job. Like, all of that is kind of on us as freelancers to figure out. And I've always felt like we've done an okay job currently to like keep up, but I've always had this nagging feeling in the back of my head that we're not necessarily doing the things we need to for the long term, like to set ourselves up to retire comfortably and not worry about it, set ourselves up to pay for our kids' college. So hard right turn to finance. And the funniest thing is that the one I liked the most was written by someone I felt like I could relate to a lot. It's a woman named Tanya Hester. She's a personal finance blogger. And the crazy thing is, I'm finishing her book and I've got tabs in every page. Like, I have sticky noted this to death and marked it up with notes for myself to ask our tax guy. Like, all this stuff I'm going to do, it's like homework for me. I'm taking it very seriously. There's a highlighter involved. And I start getting DMs from people that are like, hey, Tanya Hester just shouted you out. I'm at a financial conference and she's up on the stage with your pictures on the screen and she's saying she loves your blog. And my brain is exploding because I'm like, what's going on? What an alternate universe where she knows who I am, I know who she is, but neither of us knew we knew who each other was.
Right.
So we connected on DM and long story short, we got her here on the podcast because I love what she has to say and I just find it really approachable. We've talked to other experts on how to save up for something big like a home renovation. So I love having Tanya on just to get her perspective on that too. So let's give her a call. Hey guys. Hi, Tanya. It's Sherry and John.
Which I, of course, know because I have been listening to you since episode one.
The whole thing is like a crazy inception. I can't even explain to you how funny it is to get a bunch of screenshots of your own face on a big monitor. And then people are like, it's FinCon. And I'm like, is that about fish? Like, what has fins? And then I kept telling the story to John later and I had Googled it and I learned FinCon is actually a financial conference.
Financial blogger conference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And from the screenshots of our faces, I messaged you and said, oh my gosh, I think you're so cool. Will you be on the podcast? And here we are.
Yeah. And when I got your message on Instagram, I was like in the middle of a conversation and I was like, excuse me, I can't talk to you anymore. I need to go die for a minute.
But you know, Tanya, it was also funny this whole way that we connected and learning about not only FinCon, but just kind of like opening our eyes to the whole financial or personal finance blogosphere, because I'm sure there's people who are listening to our podcast. You know, they primarily are probably here for home stories and DIY tips, but we do talk a lot about budgeting and saving money and being affordable, or at least choosing where you spend your money wisely so you can get the most out of, you know, whatever happens to be in your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could start off by telling us, like, what might people find on your blog or other blogs like yours who want to get some more guidance in this area? Like, what are the topics that are covered?
Oh, gosh. There are personal finance blogs that cover literally everything you can possibly think of. And that's really because every single person on the earth interacts with money in some way. And so not everyone takes a huge interest in it or wants to geek out on money the way that a lot of the bloggers or writers do, but we all have to use it. And so you see people blogging about debt payoff journeys. That's often the way that a lot of people start blogging, because in this day and age, virtually everyone has debt of some form. And so people will sometimes start blogging about paying off student loans, and then maybe it's saving up for something big like your dream home or being able to make a big career change or maybe go work for yourself. Or in our case, our goal was to not have to work anymore at all. We do still work, but we don't need to, which makes it feel different. So you really, you know, I think if you're interested in checking out a different niche of blogs from home blogs, personal finance really offers something for everyone.
I'm actually wondering, maybe after our conversation, if you could send us some links to some of your favorite personal finance bloggers that run this gamut, we can throw them in the show notes for our listeners to check out.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, and I remember from your book that there was a health-related reason that drove some of your financial choices. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I knew that there was very likely going to be a disability in my future. And that's because I saw my dad have to quit work in his early 40s because of a genetic condition. And I knew that I was likely going to have the same stuff happen. And so I kind of knew, like, okay, I love to do all these outdoorsy things. I love to climb mountains and ski and hike and, you know, all this stuff that requires you to be mostly pretty able-bodied. And saw that, okay, well, he was significantly impacted in his early 40s. That doesn't give me an infinite clock. So I think when you're looking at a shorter time frame than most people have, at least to be able to do the active stuff, I knew I couldn't say, okay, I'll do this travel that I really want to do when I'm in my 60s in traditional retirement. I knew I kind of had to speed up everything. And so, yeah, for me, that was the motivation and why I decided to go for the big goal of early retirement. But certainly, I think all the principles that I use can apply to any goal and don't have to be nearly as extreme as what Mark and I did of saving a huge percent of our income to try to hurry up and stop work as soon as we could.
Well, I feel like the thing you and your husband, Mark, are probably most known for is the fact that you were able to retire early. I think, what, you at 38 and Mark at 41, is that right?
That's right.
That is obviously something very impressive. I'm sure a lot of people listening are perking up like, whoa, I would like to do that. But, you know, like you said, that may not be a goal of everyone listening or a goal that is achievable, but there are other ways that people can use some of your advice to achieve a different financial goal. But I did think, before we talked more about how you guys got to that point, I learned something interesting from reading some of your material that redefined how I thought about the term retirement. So I thought maybe you could help sort of open up that definition for us, or at least how you define it.
Yeah. Oh, I love this topic, because we do tend to have a very set idea of what retirement is, and it's largely based on what we've been sold. Like, you often see a fit-looking older white guy golfing.
Yeah. Or they're on a boat. Like, they're either traveling or golfing.
Yeah. But, you know, the reality is retirement is actually a really new concept. We have only been retiring in significant numbers for less than 100 years. So there's no reason why we have to view retirement as this fixed thing. To me, retirement just means that you no longer need to work and you can choose to put your time toward the things that are meaningful to you, whatever that looks like. For me, a lot of that is travel and doing the adventurous stuff that I love, and also having time to dig into service projects. I volunteer a lot. I care a lot about social change. And now I have time to spend on those things that I didn't have while working. Others might truly view it as one big extended vacation. To me, that sounds a bit boring, but it's really about making work optional, or at least less mandatory in your life. It's not about eliminating it or dictating anything. I mean, the reason the book is framed around early retirement is just because that's what we did. And also because it's a pretty trendy topic these days. But really, the goal is just to give yourself flexibility to live a life that feels meaningful to you.
That's what I like. It's like you don't do nothing. You do travel and adventure sporting and all that stuff. So you're not preaching this like, if you sit in the corner of your sofa and you never leave the house, you'll spend less money, you know?
Oh, for sure. And you can find very easily news stories that will tell you all about people who essentially do that. Really, as I think, Sherry, you just said so well, it's about figuring out what you value most and building a financial plan that supports that more than it is about saying you can only eat rice and beans and you can only ride your bike everywhere and you can't ever leave the country. You know, talking to you right now, we're in Scotland. I'm looking at the UK's highest mountain. We have a month here. You know, it's like a beautiful, beautiful thing to get to do. And that's my idea of how I want to spend my time. But it's figuring out what you value and shaping your money around that, which I know that sounds so simple, but most of us just don't take that step back and do it. It's the same reason why the decluttering movement is so popular right now, because we all kind of mindlessly pile up all this stuff without thinking about all the things deliberately that we're bringing into our lives. And then we wake up one day and go like, oh my gosh, how did all this stuff get here? I don't even know what it all is. I think of what I'm talking about as being exactly like the decluttering movement, but just on the financial side. So doing the same thing of looking at what is the spending that you really value, what Marie Kondo would say, what spending sparks joy, and the stuff that doesn't, figuring out how to cut that out so that you can free that money up to get you to some of your bigger life goals.
Yeah. What I loved about your book was that you had a certain like goal for a retirement age and you ended up hitting the goal much earlier than you projected, because I think the second you made the goal, you said to yourself, when I'm standing in line holding the decorative vase or the, you know, very optional cluttery type thing, you look inside and say, do I want this or do I want my bigger goal of retirement? And I think there's something so universal about that, that if someone listening is like, I love my job, I'm not aiming to retire, but I do really want a kitchen renovation, or I do really want to move into that neighborhood that feels out of reach for me and my family, but we'd be so happy there, or any other financial goal. I love that if you kind of like map it out and make the goal and even set a timeline, the idea that you were saying it was like pretty normal for people to beat their goal because you suddenly become excited by the fact that it's within reach or within the bounds of reality, like when you actually put it on paper.
Yeah, no, and I'm laughing at the vase example because I know you, Sherry, are a big lover of Target.
I love me some Target.
We have a love-hate relationship with Target.
Don't we all? And I talk about in the book how I actually had to stop going to Target because it was such a big spending trigger for me and I couldn't say no to all the beautiful things there. So it was a, I love you so much that I can't see you anymore.
Right. It's not you, Target, it's me.
Exactly, exactly. But no, you put it so well. The idea is to try to put some numbers behind your goals in life so that you can really break them down in a way that feels tangible. So if you're saying, okay, I know I need to save some money for retirement, but that's several decades away, it's hard to see how this immediate purchase in front of you is going to make any difference in that at all. Like, let's just use the vase example. Let's say it's a $20 vase. You know, how is this $20 going to change whether I can retire at 65 or not, or whether I feel secure at that age? But let's say, okay, I'm trying to take a vacation and that vacation for the family costs $10,000, but that now is a value that you can compare things against. And so that $20 vase is X percent of that vacation. Or what I like to do is think about a day of early retired life. And once you can actually divide that up and figure out the cost of a day of life, that's a much smaller number. So for most people, that might be $100, $200, you know, which is a relatively tangible number. And now all of a sudden, all of these things you might buy can say, okay, would I rather have these new hiking shoes or would I rather have a day and a half of early retirement? Things like that, I think putting money into terms that feel really real and that you can compare to everyday purchases, I think is a hugely effective strategy for starting to make better choices and just being really much more mindful about your money.
I love that idea because I'm thinking, okay, say someone at home is like, I need $10,000 for something, whether it's a kitchen renovation, a backyard patio they want to put in, or a deck. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out how to apply that concept to a renovation goal.
Well, let's say you're thinking about a bathroom renovation. If you break that down to the elements that are going to go into that renovation, And you could get the basic tile that's going to be $2 a square foot. And so it'll cost you $50 to do the whole floor or whatever. I'm doing very bad math in my head now. But if you don't buy that extra piece of clothing or that new jacket or something, that might afford you or the vase. But if you save $50 elsewhere, that might give you the chance to upgrade to a more expensive tile that you love, because you now can get the tile that's $4 a square foot or $6 a square foot.
Now you're speaking a language I understand, because I definitely...
This is why we're married, Tanya.
Well, I will think I want something. Say I want to buy a mirror, but the mirror is $200. And being best friends with Target, I know I can buy a mirror for $50. But if I do some activity where I like go around the house and I sell old stuff I've had in the attic that I'm not using, and then I find like, you know, like, well, this is a weird story, but I had Beanie Babies.
Sherry was going to auction off some Beanie Babies she found in a thrift store.
I thought I was going to make millions from these Beanie Babies. And then I just was like, the Beanie Babies are sitting around. They're doing nothing. I literally sold them, I think, for $20 on Facebook Marketplace.
This is why we don't have a personal finance blog.
But I basically rustled up ways that I saved that money. And then it didn't feel bad for me to spend $200 on the mirror, because I had made $200 selling old lamps and stuff in the garage. And my beloved Beanie Babies got to move on with their lives instead of living in a bag.
I think this is the core of what Tanya is saying, is that if you make some choice, this is a very weird analogy, like where we've spun all of your work, Tanya.
Oh, I love it. Keep going.
If you make some choices, whether it's spending less somewhere or finding some ways to generate some income by selling things you don't need anymore, then you give yourself the freedom or the flexibility to make some other choices. Now you don't have to get the budget mirror. You don't have to skimp there if the mirror is something that is of importance to you.
Yeah, I talk about this a lot in the book. Ultimately, what I would love to see everyone walking around with is a money mission statement, which is sort of a statement of like, here are the things that I spend money on because I value them. Here are the things I don't spend money on because I don't value them. The analogy I love to use is, let's say that you're a vegetarian and someone says to you, hey, do you want a burger? You don't have to expend any mental energy answering that question. You know the answer is no, because you don't eat burgers. And so if you can do a similar mental thing for yourself with your money, now all of a sudden you can use your willpower on decisions that actually matter, and it's freeing. So another thing to do, in addition to selling your Beanie Babies or doing whatever kind of side hustle,
making that money,
might do, yeah, is to really focus on keeping your spending level over time. So one of the things that most of us tend to do is we tend to increase our spending as our earnings go up. And maybe that extra earning is through promotions, maybe it's through doing side hustle type work. It can really be any way you want. But if instead you can keep your spending level and let your earnings increase and then focus on saving all of the increases, that is pretty darn magical for how quickly those savings can add up.
I remember back before we had children, when I was still working at my office job, I got a raise at one point. And so I don't remember it, like upped my, you know, biweekly paycheck by like $150 or $200 or something. And instead of us taking that money and saying, great, now we can go, you know, spend more on food or go to the movies more often or whatever, we decided that we were going to take that extra money that was coming in with each paycheck and immediately put it towards paying our mortgage off faster. So we didn't change our lifestyle at all because we were fine at that moment. Like, we could survive on what was left of our paycheck after paying all of our bills. So we used that extra to pay our bills more.
I love that. It's funny to me because you guys are doing so much of what is in the book already by funneling that extra earnings into savings, which is honestly the whole way that Mark and I were able to retire early. Is we just used that same strategy. But anytime we got a raise, we increased how much we were saving and investing. And after a number of years, you know, the money really adds up if you do that, and you never even see it leave your paycheck. So it's not painful at all. Those are definitely options that I want people to know they have, and a reason why I wanted to write the book, honestly, because I do think early retirement, if you just kind of read the stories online or you read blogs, it feels very all or nothing and like something that you have to be earning six figures or be, you know, a computer engineer and not have kids to do. And it's just not true. So I give examples in there of people who've done a lot of this stuff with children, with lower incomes, with single incomes. And, you know, folks may have more options than they know.
Well, were there certain spending categories that you found it easier to cut down on or cut out entirely? I know I love examples. Like, for me, I don't spend money on coffee. I don't pay to get my hair cut or dyed. But like, I have friends who love spending on those, and so their priorities are different. What did you and Mark change?
So the thing that I cut back the most on is actually like home things.
I love this conversation though.
And I mean, just to establish cred, like I have been featured in apartment therapy for my apartment in LA.
Nice.
So, you know, we did a kitchen and a whole apartment, and we did them the budget way for sure. I think you guys would be proud. But I think it was less about saying, okay, we don't care about how our house looks anymore, because around this time we also moved from LA to Lake Tahoe. But it was saying we don't need to be continually changing it. So we can do some things that make it comfortable and livable and then just let it be.
Yes.
And I used to have more of the a room is never finished kind of philosophy. And I was always keeping an eye open for some new accessory, or I'd go to the flea markets in LA, which are really great and tempting. And I just finally said, hey, let's just call these rooms finished. Let's just say this is our bedroom. This is our family room. And we still live in beautiful spaces, but they're the same now as they were 7 years ago. And I stopped getting House Beautiful and all of the magazines that tempted me.
That's smart. That's like cutting out Target.
Yeah. And so I have no idea if our room is not trendy anymore, you know, like it's just out of my consciousness. So I think the other things are I buy very few clothes. We don't really buy new electronics. So my phone is about 4 years old. Mark's is about 3. It was also changing how we travel. So we value travel a ton, but we used to stay in more central hotels that were a little bit nicer. Now we stay in nice hotels if it's on points. But if we're paying, we're in an Airbnb or even a hostel. And we found that what we really care about is being in the place, not what thread count of sheets we sleep on. And so for us, that was an easy trade to make. Again, it's just looking at what you truly value. And for us, the travel is the value, not the niceness of the hotel. And it's easy then to kind of cut some of that stuff back that might just feel automatic. Really look into that and say, what of this do I actually need versus what just feels like it comes along with that, but I could actually trim away.
Yeah. When John and I moved to our neighborhood, everyone went to the same, it's not even a gym. It's like a community center. It has a big outdoor pool. And it's like almost like,
it's like a mega gym.
Right. It's as if we had a town pool, but we didn't, but the whole town pays for that pool. And so we did that. And then we realized, you know, we have a little lake and we go to this lake all the time instead. And we just realized like, we like going to the lake and sitting in a chair and watching the sunset more than this like boisterous thing that all of our neighbors do. And like, they love it and it's a value for them, but it doesn't mean because everyone else does it, it has to be something that we keep doing if we love this other much cheaper 4 minutes away alternative that's more our speed. But for a while, John kept the membership to work out there. And we had this moment where we were really looking at our spending and we were like, would it make more sense for him to do things like a la carte?
Well, I did the math and I realized at the frequency at which I was going, I was paying about $20 or $25 per visit. And I could go to a yoga class at a studio for $10.
I think that's such a great point and really a good way to approach so much. Subscriptions are a big way that people are spending a lot of money without seeing it. So look at your credit card bill or your bank statement and look for those subscriptions and then do what, John, you did of looking at the per use cost. You know, little things might not seem like they add up. You know, Netflix costs $12 a month or whatever it is. If you're using Netflix a lot, that might feel super cheap. But if you don't use it, then that is money that's completely wasted that you could use on something else.
That's maybe what we should do. We should look at our bills and see what automatic things we're using and see if we really get that money.
I did this the other day and realized I was paying for 2 newspaper subscriptions online for the
same newspaper.
Just under 2 different email addresses. So I saved us $5 a month by canceling one. Thank you very much. That'll be on my financial blog. Well, Tanya, this was so fascinating. I'm so glad we had a chance to connect and talk to you. In our show notes, we'll make sure that everyone can find links to your blog, your book, also your podcast. I don't think we mentioned that you have a podcast as well. So we'll make sure everyone can find that stuff if they go to younghustlelove.com/podcast. So if they want to dive deeper into this, they can do that. And they'll also find those links for the other personal finance bloggers that you suggest they start with. Sound good?
Yep, that sounds good. Sorry, I didn't know how to respond there.
No, that's okay. It wasn't really a question. I do that all the time. So thank you again, Tanya. We will talk to you soon, hopefully.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. Take care. Bye, Tanya.
Again, like I said, head over to the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast to check out Tanya's book and her blog and, I guess, jump on this financial knowledge train with Sherry.
And then you can dive into sexy fairy books because you really can pivot quite easily between those two things.
Thank goodness there aren't sexy fairy blogs.
Maybe there are.
That's going to be our next venture.
Yes. Well, young dragon love. No, nope, no. That sounds bad.
No.
No.
Our next venture is going to be we're digging, and I am actually digging something that is a painting tool everyone should have. I know people probably think they have all the painting supplies they need, but this is something you might be overlooking. But first, we're going to take a quick break. It's no secret that photos can make any holiday gift feel more special or more personal, but I think we also all know that photo gifts have a history of being kind of cheap and cheesy.
Mouse pads, anyone?
Yes, I'm looking at you, mouse pads. But forget everything you think about photo gifts and check out this week's sponsor, Social Print Studio. We've loved using them over the years because of how quirky and cool their products are, not to mention how easy and affordable they are, especially since you can do it all through their Print Studio app on your phone.
Yeah, John recently got these little tiny photo books. They are so insanely cute. They're like a shrunken family photo album. They have 24 photos in them, and you get three of them for $18. That's $6 a book. They'd be easy to throw into a gift for the grandparents or your friends, and might I add that they look very cute in a dollhouse.
Well, they have tons of stuff like that, not necessarily for dollhouses, but our kids always love their photo stickers. They sell photo magnets for as little as $1 a piece, and for the holidays, they even have these cool metal ornaments with a photo on each side. So there's tons of options for dressing up your gift wrapping, stuffing those stockings, or upping your holiday card game.
Plus, they're giving our listeners 15% off any order with the code YHL15 now through December 9th, both at socialprintstudio.com/YHL, as well as through their Print Studio app.
Yep, and heads up that the Social Print Studio's standard shipping deadline for Christmas orders is December 13th. I came up with a really good pun during the break.
What was it?
The thing I'm digging will take your painting to new heights.
I thought you were going to say we'll go a long way in helping you out.
Both work. I prefer mine.
Never forget the best pun I ever said, which was cold feet about heated floors. Oh, so yeah. Proud of that.
So the thing I'm digging this week is a painting extension pole. And these are those long sticks. They're usually about 6 feet long. You can sometimes buy one that also extends longer that you attach to the back of a standard paint roller. Like if you have a regular paint roller, you've probably noticed there's like usually a little screw thread on the bottom of it. That's where you can put these extension poles in. And the name makes it sound like, oh yeah, it's an extension pole. So like if I have a really tall ceiling, like a 12-foot lofted ceiling or a 2-story vaulted ceiling, like that's a way I could reach higher if I can't get somewhere like just from, you know, a stepladder alone. That is a use for them. But I urge you to consider getting one to help you paint your normal sized rooms as well, like the walls that are straight in front of you that you can reach with your hand or even have to bend down to reach. Because here's the trick about an extension pole is that it actually saves you from doing a lot of the bending and reaching that you might have to do when you're painting a room. I will say for a long time, we didn't use them to paint unless we were using them to paint like a ceiling or something. They are helpful for ceilings as well. But I'll say they really save your back and even I guess your knees a little bit from all the bending you would do normally because they are like an extension of your own arm. It's like a go-go gadget arm with your paint roller on the end so that you can kind of stand in one place and roll up and down an entire 8-foot wall without even bending once.
Part of me is like, why do they make paint roller handles, like the normal handles, so short? Because it might be helpful if those were like 2 feet long. But I think it might be to get into smaller crevices or to be less unwieldy when you store it.
Right.
So the big extension pole is definitely amazing. And it's like $59, right, John?
No. Well, I was telling Sherry I was having trouble figuring out an average price for one because I've had mine for years and I don't remember how much I paid for it. I have a metal one that extends to 12 feet because I bought it when we were painting our stairwell here because it was a 2-story stairwell and I needed the actual extension element of it. But you can also get just like a standard wooden one for like $7. But I was telling her I was having trouble because on Home Depot's website, they seem to be selling like 24 packs that are like $200. It's like, who needs 24 extension poles?
I will tell you that once in our second house, I taped a paintbrush to an extension pole and it helped me edge, like cut in around a window in the ceiling. It was a skylight, I think. And it totally worked. So it was like a go-go gadget arm in that sense too, but without a roller, it was just a paintbrush. So I feel like they're generally very helpful and worth the like $7.99.
Yeah, so I'll put some links in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast if you want to check it out. I'm not saying you have to have it to paint a room, but I think your body might appreciate it.
And this week, I am digging something that the rest of the world discovered literally years ago, and I am the last one on the train. The train left the station. It came back a few times. I said, no thanks, I'll take the next one. Finally got on the train, obsessed and loving this thing.
I don't think you're the last one on the train, because we've told a lot of people personally about this, and a lot of people have not seen it yet. It's a television show.
Yes, it is The Handmaid's Tale. There are 3 seasons. I'm already halfway. Are we 2.5 in? Like, yeah. We're almost to the end?
We're almost to the end. And the reason why we just got on the train, you didn't point this out, is that we finally have Hulu, because it's a Hulu exclusive. Like, that's the only place you can watch it. And we have not had Hulu for the longest time. But, and this is a confession I'll make, we got it temporarily because our children really enjoy watching The Masked Singer.
In 5 conversations with grownups, they're like, you know what's the worst show? The Masked Singer. And I'm like, oh, we watch that.
No, we went so highbrow with Handmaid's Tale, and then we were back down in the muck with Masked Singer. So anyways, we got Hulu because that's the only place we could find The Masked Singer, and it was like $6 a month to have Hulu, so we figured, like, we'll have it for a little while just so they can watch this season, and then we'll cancel it. But we figured while we had it, we should take advantage of some of the Hulu content, like Handmaid's Tale, that we've been eager to check out. And so I don't feel like we should spend a lot of time describing what it is.
Well, I will just tell you what it's not. I thought it was a period-type show.
Yeah, like a period drama?
Right. I don't love those, guys. I mean, I watched Downton Abbey for a few seasons, and then I totally fell off. But I like Today. Like, my joke about Downton Abbey...
I like Today.
Because my joke about Downton Abbey is, like, an entire episode was when Sybil was like, I wore pants.
Sherry's a time snob, everyone. If it's not taking place in the present time, it's not worth her time.
I loved Sybil. I didn't think pants was really a plot line I wanted to invest 49 minutes to.
Let's not piss off the Downton Abbey fans, okay?
Yes, please don't come at me. So when I started watching this, I was like, oh, I thought this was like olden days. And John was like, no, it's like a post-apocalyptic type thing. And I was like, I am instantly in. Let's binge this. I'm not leaving the couch. Yeah. I did have to leave the couch.
Yeah.
It does take like a series of weeks to get through it, but it is amazing. I feel like there's a lot of girl power in it. There's a lot of cheering for the underdog. The weird thing we realized in talking to our friends very passionately about how much we love it.
I was like, you have spun this in such a sunny light that it's like, girl power, let's go underdogs. It is a very dark show with very, very heavy topics.
Yes, it's very dark. But what I was getting to is I feel like I haven't been into a binge like this for this long. I hesitate to say that I haven't watched Housewives in like 3 weeks. So I have like 8 saved up episodes of those. And I'm still on Handmaid's Tale. It is a train I am enjoying very much. So if you've already been through it, no spoilers. Do not tell me what's coming. And if you haven't, I would recommend it, but only if you're into that dark,
heavy, topical.
Yes, it's very heavy, but I find the characters so wonderful. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And if there's someone you know who might enjoy our chat with Tanya today, please take this as your cue to tell them about it. Send them a link to the show notes, help them download it to their phone, or give it a shout out on social media. However you do it, we are so, so grateful to you for spreading the word.
And while you're at it, let us know what you were doing while you listened. Like Elizabeth, who listened with her husband while they applied zebra stripe decals to a new golf cart.
I was going to make like a cat meow sound, but I realized it should be a zebra sound, and I don't know what that is.
I feel like it's a...
Sure.
Horse-like.
And as always, you can find this week's show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. This week, we've got links to Tanya's recommended personal finance blogs and some of those painting extensions. Polls.
Plus, a look at the house with all the gold skeleton decorations on it. It is amazing, maybe even life-changing.
Later.
Bye. What we realized when we were talking to our friends and like trying to sell them on it, we all agreed that our favorite series ever was Breaking Bad, which is also dark and sort of cheering for kind of the bad guy, but he's also kind of the good guy.
Not much girl power in that one.
Not that much. Although, I don't know, there were some cool girl characters. Like, I love the sister cop. Oh, I'm thinking of Dexter. That's where I was going to go next. I was moving on to Dexter.
And I'm sure Deb likes to be known as Sister Cop.
The Sister Cop Deb. I love me some Deb. And then Deb and Dexter dated in real life, and then they broke up. Anyway, side notes.